and welcome to an all-new edition of Talking Fußball, the Bundesliga show, your source for all things German football. My name is Nick Wildhagen, and boy, do I have a jam-packed show for you this time around. Mainz do fire Bo Svensson, Köln's crisis continues as they drop into last, and there's the tiny matter of the match, a marketing genius at the DFL labelled as Der Klassiker. All of those things and an awful lot more is what we'll be chatting about on this episode, and we do have three guests coming on various points of the show, and I'll simply introduce them as we go along. And if that isn't enough, I'm also joined by none other than the pride of Croydon, the man who makes Roger Ebert look like a bit of an idiot who didn't know what he was talking about, Terry DeFallens here. How are you doing, Terry?
I'm very well, thank you. Although I should stress, obviously, Roger is not here to defend himself.
No.
Although, you know, you're probably right, Nick, to be fair. I'm just launching a new podcast on classic movies, but I'm not really in a classica mood at the moment.
Well, I'm drinking tea today. As I was told on the first episode of your new movie podcast to drink tea and send all of my beer to John Hartley, which I promptly did.
I have just finished my tea out of my BFLB mug, which I am still sticking to because I am a loyal fan and, you know, stick with them through and through.
Right. Well, we'll take a close look at the most exciting stories from the Bundesliga after this break. So stay with us. Right, here we go. It's part one of Talking Fußball. It's time to talk about the most exciting stories that the Bundesliga has produced the last couple of weeks. And, well, you might be surprised to learn that we won't be starting with the BVB against Bayern match because we simply didn't think it was all that exciting. Whilst that might be a controversial standpoint to take, we'll give you an in-depth explanation in part two of the show. Instead, we'll start with something completely different. Eintracht Frankfurt, let's start with them then. They're undefeated in 10 points from the last four matches, and now they're getting closer to the European spots as the likes of Leipzig, Dortmund and Hoffenheim are starting to drop points. Terry, what's happened?
Well, I think that they had a difficult start to the season for a number of reasons. Obviously, they've got a new coach, relatively inexperienced coach, Dino Topmuller, a man with a famous name, but not a great deal of coaching experience to fall back on. And they probably had a few issues working through that. And of course, there was the whole saga with Radel Kolarov as well, who was probably staying and then suddenly wasn't staying because PSG said, we'll pay the ridiculous transfer fee that you want. And so they've had to deal with that. So they had a run. It wasn't as grim as you might have thought, but a lot of draws. They couldn't confirm draws in. They only got managed draws with Cologne and Bochum and a team of their standing you'd think might do better than that. And they lost against Wolfsburg. But since then, well, since actually that group stage loss to PAOK in the Conference League, it's been pretty much gravy, actually. Wins against Heidenheim, Hoffenheim, and that cracking 3-3 draw against Dortmund, which they so easily could have won.
You were impressed.
Yeah, I mean, that was a brilliant game of football all around. I really enjoyed that. I mean, I guess as a Dortmund guy, I should be sort of like gnashing my teeth and thinking, oh, what a shame Dortmund couldn't get 3 points out of that. But that, and I know there was some crazy VAR, and genuinely crazy VAR, which let's not get into, but there was. But, you know, I mean, it was what it was, and it was a really entertaining game of football. I thought Frankfurt were fantastic in that match. I thought Marmoush was everywhere. I mean, Marmoush at one point, I'm pretty certain, at half time, he was actually making the tea. That's how much work he was doing in that game. He was doing everything. He was running the line for the referee. He was making the tea at half time. You know, he was scoring goals, creating assists. Fantastic. Brilliant performance. And yeah, obviously they beat Union Berlin this weekend, but then hey, everyone's beating Union Berlin, so that's no big deal.
I mean, the most impressive stat from that match, and I have to chime in and mention that, they actually had 4 shots and scored 3 goals.
Nice. We do like a bit of larceny in football. And from a Union perspective, it shows what happens when you're down there and the Lux is going against you. But obviously beating Victoria Köln, you know, in the cup, you think, well, actually, they could, but, you know, it's difficult. And they're through to the cup. And there's only a handful of Bundesliga teams left in the cup, which we'll discuss later on. So actually, it's setting itself up quite nicely for a big season. They're on the verges of the European spots and they're coming into form just as the season's getting going. And just as it looks like perhaps Stuttgart and Hoffenheim are regressing to the mean, as anticipated on this very podcast.
So, suddenly, they start looking like candidates for Europe. Is that what you're saying? Because, I mean, they are called the Moody Diva from the Mine. They are. They really are. That's been their nickname in the German press for ages. But is, you know, the Moody Diva singing the sweet songs for the rest of the season is the question.
I think that there's no reason why that shouldn't be the case. They have been consistently a European side for the last few seasons. They are a European Cup winner, well, be it a Europa League winner. They've won a European trophy, that is to say. And there's no reason why, at the beginning of the season, you wouldn't have thought, you know, again. If I remember rightly, when we were thinking about Frankfurt at the beginning of the season, I think it was kind of maybe based on what Colomani would do. But I don't remember them figuring too much in our prognostications for the season. But all of that said, we shouldn't really be surprised that they are where they are. I mean, if you look at their wins, draws and losses, they've only lost one Bundesliga game this season. So actually, you know, they're doing pretty well. It's just that they've kicked it up a notch in the last five games and they look like the real deal. The only proviso is, of course, is that they should be banned from European competition, not on the basis of anything that they've done, but on the basis of their atrocious airport, which everybody hates.
Yeah, you know, that airport is horrid. It's really horrid. Right, travel via Frankfurt. Not that popular, it turns out. But let's leave Frankfurt behind and let's take a closer look at their local rivals, which are Mainz, the 05ers. They got their first win of the season against Leipzig. And that happened after Mainz coach Bo Svensson stepped down after his team's cup defeat in midweek against Bundesliga 2 side Hertha. Svensson said, nobody's bigger than the club, and left. Terry, have you been surprised by Mainz starting this dreadfully into the season?
Yes, of course. I mean, I think that we thought that Mainz wouldn't necessarily be pulling up any trees, but certainly didn't think that they would struggle. It is difficult to know just what has gone wrong, so spectacularly wrong, in the short time between the end of last season and the beginning of this. It is a surprise, but they have at the same time been truly awful. And you can only imagine that Bo Svensson feels that, you know, his message is not getting through to the dressing room anymore and had to take some steps. Now, it's possible I could be cynical and thinking, well, maybe Svensson's got something else lined up and has maybe decided to walk. But I'm going to assume that that's not actually the case. I'm just thinking that he's looking at this and gone, oh, I've been here quite a while now. I can't work with these players anymore, clearly. So something has to change. And in fairness, it turns out, well, the early indications are that he might be right, because, of course, Jan Sievert's come in and, you know, it's like a breath of fresh air and they've suddenly bounced back. So, you know, maybe something had happened in that dressing room where Bo Svensson just lost his authority or just a general decline. It's really difficult to tell. But obviously, Mainz aren't the only Bundesliga team that got knocked out of the cup. But if you feel that you get to a point where you're just not getting through and your season's just like all your avenues for fun this season are shutting down, then maybe, you know, it's the best to do the right thing. But it's hard to imagine that Christian Heidel would have put him under any pressure at Mainz, because I don't think Heidel really operates that way. That is the president or sporting director of the club.
Well, I mean, the thing is, me and you, we are not really big on our minds.
We're not, to be fair.
But I know a guy who is, and that is Michael Ebert, who writes about them for Kicker.
It's not Roger Ebert, then?
No, Michael Ebert.
Michael Ebert.
Roger's lesser-known brother. No, let's ask Michael Ebert. Joining me now is Michael Ebert, who covers Mainz for Kicker. Now, Michael, I was sort of prepared to ask you what went wrong at Mainz so far this season and all that, and what went wrong against Leipzig. But turns out, against Leipzig, things really worked out for once for Mainz. What happened?
Yeah, everybody was very astonished about the result against Leipzig. And the sport director says after the game, now it's Abstiegskampf. I don't know the English word. Perhaps you can...
Battle against relegation.
Yes. This would mean before this, they didn't fight well. They just play a little bit and think a little bit, and they make many mistakes. But yesterday, everything gets good, and they make no big mistakes in the game. And with a good fight against Leipzig, they get more and more good vibrations. And in the second half, they scored twice.
They did so indeed. Well, the new guy who was on the sideline after Bo Svensson was fired was Jan Sievert. Now, some of you may remember him because he was the interim, I think, against Bayern Munich in 2021. But for those of us who cannot remember him, what can you tell me about him?
He is 24 years old, and for the last 1 year, he managed the second team. This would be in the Academy of Mainz. They played in the fourth league. And before this, he was the chief manager of the youth of Mainz. And in this function, he made the one team in the Bundesliga before Bo Svensson came. It was a 2-5 defeat at Bayern Munich. And in his former life, so you can say this, he also had been to Huddersfield Town from January 2019 till the end of the season. They relegated, and after the first games in the championship, he gets sacked. And there he was, the successor of David Wagner. And they already had been on the last place when he joined Huddersfield. So it was a situation he can do no much things.
Well, now he's sort of in a situation where people are asking, is he going to take over permanently? Is he going to get some more games under his belt? Is the club going to sort of look into if he's the right guy or not? So, what do you hear? Is he going to get a few more games on the sidelines for Mainz?
For the moment, of course. In 21, he had only one game. It was already clear that Bo will come in the middle of January. But now, they said, we will see how it works. And yesterday, it works very good against Leipzig. So he gets one more chance next week in Darmstadt. They are also on the bottom of the Bundesliga. And after this, we will see what happens. But I think at all that the sports CEO of Mainz, Christian Heidel, he would prefer to get to find a manager who has more experience in the profi leagues. But it's not sure if he wins the second game and the third game. Perhaps he will rest for the rest of the season or till the winter break at first.
Well, I mean, coming up before the winter break, there's Heidenheim at home, there's Cologne on the road, there is Darmstadt, the next match, on the road as well. I mean, those are basically the three matches that Mainz are looking to win now, right?
Yes, but they also said this before the game in Bochum last week, and there they make a 2-2. But only in the last minute. And they were very lucky about this point they got. And yeah, it's not really sure what it will happen. But normally they must win two of these three games.
All right. Well, I mean, you talked a little bit about the things that had gone wrong so far this season. I mean, going into the season, everybody thought, like, well, Mainz, they have a great coach in Bo Svensson. They didn't lose any sort of really important players during the transfer window, so they should do well. Why haven't they done well under Bo Svensson this season?
It's not one moment, really. It's then the last victory against Bayern Munich that was in April. It was the last victory of Mainz before yesterday. And after this, they only make a few draws, and the rest, they lost the rest of the games. And it was now at the end, the conviction was missing. And Bo also asked Heidel and Schmidt, so the sports CEO and the sports director, that he don't see that he can help the team again. And after the 0-3 at Hertha BSC in the cup game last Wednesday in the night, they have had a meeting in the hotel and discussed for hours. And at 3:30 in the night, the decision was there that they will stop, not the contract. This contract is still continuous for the moment, but that Bo will not be the team manager more.
Right. I mean, it's a strange one, but well, we'll see how it turns out over that Mainz. Michael, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Okay, thank you.
That was Michael Ebert, who writes for Kicker, you know, the German football bible, the magazine of reference for anybody who loves German football. But anyways, whilst Mainz are sort of like looking like they started to get their act together under Jan Sievert, another team that desperately needed to do so was Köln on this weekend. And boy, did they play a thrilling match against Augsburg, didn't they?
They did. You might think that Cologne 1, Augsburg 1 is not necessarily a thrilling 1-1 draw, but by all accounts it was. I believe the woodwork was hit a number of times and that Dahlmann had to make some pretty decent saves as well. So a point for the Billy Goats and a brief moment of respite, or maybe it's something to build on given their derby success from earlier.
Right, so Köln dropped into last place with that result, actually. So I thought it was a good time to call up FC's superfan Randall Haug. And, well, I didn't do an interview with him, but Randall was kind enough to send us his thoughts on the Billy Goat season so far. So listen in as he discusses Cologne's current predicament.
Hello, Talking Foosball family. Randall Haug here from Seattle, Washington in the United States, here to discuss the Erster Foosball Club Köln. Nick reached out. Thanks, Nick, to see if I wanted to share any thoughts on the current situation in Cologne. And I don't think he meant discussing the fact that the carnival session opens next weekend on 11-11. So he can only have meant the fact that the Billy Goats currently sit bottom of the table. 5 points, 10 matches, 8 goals scored, which when you've given up 22 in 10 matches, that would normally be a negative. But if you're only scoring 8, it kind of almost makes that seem like a non-issue, but I assure you, both of those numbers are an issue leading to the 5 points. Picked up the 5th point yesterday in a trip to Augsburg, which I guess we'll have to take that as a positive step, having lost so many matches so far this season. The only other points come from an early draw with Frankfurt in match day 3, and of course the derby victory over Borussia Mönchengladbach, which we're all happy for. But the shine of that came off a little bit, getting bounced by Kaiserslautern earlier this week in the second round of the DFB Pokal. So, what is going on? We still have Steffen Baumgart at the helm. I firmly believe that most of the Billy Goats fans are still behind him, believe in him. He's probably the biggest star in the club, which is a problem. The transfer policy of the summer did not bring in any even middling names, unless you want to count Luca Waldschmidt as a middling name, that might have felt promising to drive this team into at least a mid-table position. We're looking at a relegation fight this year, ladies and gentlemen. There's no getting around it. And I'm not saying that just because we're dead last. That would be obvious now, of course, to anyone. But it's just not a team that's constructed for success. There have been some financial issues driving the transfer policy. Unfortunately, you see Seru Girassi, good for him, good for Stuttgart, but bad for us because he's tearing up the league and not with the Billy Goat on the breast, despite the fact he was in the club recently. So that was an opportunity missed. It's hard to see how this is going to really turn around, but I'm going to go ahead and just believe that Baumgart will find his way. He's definitely getting more angry by the minute. It's not just a loud thing with him. He's ready to make some changes, has said changes are coming. And I think we will all sit back and with nervous hopefulness that he will find the solution. And if Jonas Hector, you want to come back and bail us out, we all love you, but don't feel obligated. You said you were going to retire. You gave us plenty of warning. You deserve it. All right, folks. Peace. Talk to you later.
Right, those were Randall's thoughts on Köln so far this season. And, well, the Billy Goats are up against Bochum, Bayern, Darmstadt and Mainz in the next 4 matches. Terry, what do you think about that stretch of matches? This is surely make or break, right?
Oh, make or break? Don't know. I think Baumgart's got a lot of credit in the bank. I'm also not altogether certain that they would have had a succession plan ready for him, but they might have the time to do that. They won't beat Bayern. That's a free hit. But there'll be a lot of pressure on those fixtures, particularly the Bochum game, because that's a local-ish derby. So it's likely to be a big occasion. Darmstadt and Mainz, obviously, totally beatable teams, in theory. But to the bottom team, who knows. But yeah, ultimately and succinctly, I think Baumgart's longer-term future at the club is going to be a little bit clearer after this run of games.
I think 6 points or he walks.
He walks or he's kicked.
He walks or he gets, you know, the boot. One of those two.
Yeah. I mean, Cologne probably really can't afford to get relegated, can they?
No.
I mean, who can? But I mean, I think Cologne feel like one of them clubs that really can't get afford to get relegated. So, but I still feel ultimately the issue here is that the club suffer from a lack of recruitment budget. And that's not something that the coach, any coach can do a great deal about. I think he's done a great job getting the best out of what he has, but it might well be that he's running out of steam. I hope that doesn't happen because he's great. But if I'm a Cologne fan, I might take a different view.
Who doesn't love a sixpence on the sidelines? Anyways, a team that has been suffering from a lack of recruitment budget and a team that certainly cannot afford to get relegated one more time is Werder Bremen. And, well, they had a tough away trip to VfL Wolfsburg this weekend. That match ended 2-2, meaning that Werder took their first away point of the season. But even though this result is sort of playing a part in determining Werder's future prospects in the Bundesliga, something a little bigger happened at the Weserstadion this week, as the club announced that the man in charge of operations for the last 8 years, one Frank Baumann, has decided to step down at the end of the season. So I thought we need to dive into that story because it's certainly more interesting than the Klassiker for me. So I called up Flo Reinicke and talked a little bit about that with him. Joining me now is Flo Reinicke, who we all know from the fantasy podcast of old. And we do know that Flo and I are big Werder Bremen fans, the both of us. And, well, there was some big news at Werder Bremen. Frank Baumann told the media and the fans that he was going to leave Werder after 8 years in charge as the main man there. So, Flo, to remind our listeners, in which position did Frank Baumann find the club and what did he do?
So as he first came to the club, Werder was able to stay clear of relegation. That's the theme for the last like 12 years. And they did successfully that, but had a very bad season. And that was the only full season under Viktor Skripnik. They had a bad season. And afterwards, Eichin, who was then like who was the predecessor of Baumann, he wanted to fire Skripnik, but everyone else in the club wanted to stick with him because he was a club legend. And like, sacking coaches is not something that Bremen likes to do. And so and that's also a common theme in the last decade, that they hold on to coaches too long for their own good. And that's what happened with Skripnik. So they said no, and Eichin said it's either me or him. And then that shows, yeah, it's Skripnik then. Baumann took over, and one cup match, which they lost against a club you probably never heard about. It's called SF Lotte. Back then, I think it was a third-tier club. Now it's a fourth-tier club, but still, they lost in the cup. And then they lost the first three games of the season. And then it was curtains for Viktor Skripnik. So they basically had their chief of operations resign or get fired because he wanted to fire the coach. They didn't want to do it and fire him like 4 games later. So that's the kind of club structure we're talking about right now. And I mean, it's my fair play to Baumann. He knew that basically if it weren't for Skripnik, he wouldn't be, he hadn't gotten this job. And then being able to pull the trigger on the coach after just 4 matches, I think was a good decision because the ending of the season before was so bad that they almost got relegated. So it's not like it was a fresh start and then after 4 games you lose patience. That would be bad. But in this case, I think it was actually, I didn't think that they would admit that they made a mistake, because that's basically it. If you fire the coach 4 games into the season, that you should have been better off changing the coach in the summer. Yeah, so that basically was his start. So Bremen were stripped for cash like they are in the last 10 years as well. And he had to work with that. did some good business, did some bad business as a whole. I think that's what you have to say. The situation from the club back then and now, I would actually say, is quite similar. And what Baumann in this time, he had good transfers and bad transfers. I think what he failed to accomplish is to be able to... The philosophy of the club get changed at some point during the Kofeld era. I think we spoke about that in the Werder Bremen pods, that they like not getting young guys to develop, but getting older players who hadn't performed at their peak level, but were good some way back. And that didn't work out, and it left the club with highly paid players who weren't performing and no one else wanted to pay a lot of money for. And that's, like, in my opinion, is bad business for the club.
So what legacy does he leave behind after, you know, 8.5 years when he leaves in 2024?
I think that Werder got relegated in that time is to big part because of the philosophy change and holding, like, Kofeld, not sacking Kofeld earlier and then sacking him like after 33 match days. That was ridiculous, in my opinion. So it's neither good nor bad, in my opinion. They got stuck. And in football, basically, if you're not developing, you go back, in my opinion. So they failed to make the next step. And if you look at the transfers for this season, it's hard to imagine they can, like, they don't have any young players really at the club. They have Njinma and he's 22, and Voltemade, like these two guys, but there's their own product. They don't bring in young guys, they just play older guys.
Leon Optitz, isn't he a...
Yeah, sure, but like he played 5 minutes this season, so that's an issue with Baumann. And there are especially two bones I have to pick with Baumann, and that's not, like, Bremen had a buyback clause for Niklas Füllkrug back in the time when he was at Nuremberg, and it was at 1.8 million euros. And Bremen didn't do it. Füllkrug went on to Hannover for, like, pennies and went on to scoring many goals in the Bundesliga, even for Hannover. So that was the thing I couldn't understand. Later on, they bring him back for 10 million. That's not just not smart business. I mean, they were able to capitalize on his big run, selling him for profit, but you couldn't bank on that happening for a 30-year-old, that he would actually make profit. And the second thing is Jan-Niklas Beste, who's shining for Heidenheim, who shone for Heidenheim in the second division, who had great loan spells. He was under contract at Bremen and they basically just let him go. I can't understand. If you look at the player like Beste, like, why don't keep a player like him at the club? And I think that's something we see at Bremen, even with a guy like Niklas Schmidt, who got sold. He shines now in France, plays in League One, pretty good role. We've seen that for a long time with Romano Schmid. I mean, it's not just Baumann. You have to, like, that's definitely also a coach's decision. But we loaned out Aaron Dingshi, and he would by far be the best goals. Like, if you include him, I think Beste and Dingshi would be the two best goal scorers, because Dux is the top scorer at Bremen at 3 goals. And they're playing for Heidenheim. And Dingshi is actually still under contract at Bremen. Like, I don't understand why loan out players like that. So as a whole, the philosophy of Baumann is always looking for the home run transfer. Like, the transfer of Naby Keita is just like what Baumann always did. And in the past, it was quite often the case that they were waiting for something big to happen, and then it just didn't happen. I mean, we remember, I actually forgot his name, the ex-Hertha player Bremen were, Grujic. They like were holding on to Grujic until deadline day. And there was no, okay, no, we can't pull it off. Okay, so we have nothing. And I think that's a flaw in the whole process behind the Bremen transfer business. It's like, I don't see the vision to say, we need, as a club, we need players we can sell on for more money than we bring it in. And I just don't see that as like their corner philosophy. And I'm not like, as a club who hasn't got any external money, I don't see how you can survive in the Bundesliga. Because like sometimes you miss on the guy who's 28 and you just burn the money and that's it. And you need one young player to develop to like feed you for seasons to come. And I'm not sure that's even possible.
So what is Frank Baumann's successor? What, you know, what should he look like and what are his main tasks going forward?
I mean, it's odds on that's Clemens Fritz. And I'm pretty sure it's going to change nothing inside the club because they were very close working together. And I'm not sure if it's even possible to bring in an external guy. So it's now they saying that they have like a selection process and they're looking at other options, but they also already asked Fritz and he said he wants to do it. So imagine that an external guy comes in and Fritz, like his position is pretty powerful inside of the club. He's head of the scouting department and head of the players license, whatever these guys call themselves. But like he has a very powerful position and it's now known that he wants the job that Baumann vacates next summer. And if the club just saying, no, we actually take someone else and these guys have to work close together, how is that going to work? It only can work if Fritz and the guy who comes in know each other well and Fritz is fine with it. Otherwise, I think you're creating some kind of poison inside of the club. And that's definitely a problem. And there are reports that the Bremen asked Per Mertesacker, who's head of the youth academy at Arsenal right now, but he doesn't want to leave London. So he lives there with his family. And that's just the kind of person that Mertesacker strikes me, who would say, no, I'm not going, like, we're living here for a long time with my kids and my wife and everything else. I don't want to move them out of their lives. That's why I highly rate Mertesacker, but that's also why he doesn't take the job. So it's, yeah, I'm not sure that there's even a real other possibility than Clemens Fritz just taking the next step.
All right, that is it then. Flo, thank you so much for joining us once again on Talking Fußball.
Yeah, you're welcome, Nick.
Right, once again, thank you to Flo Reinicke for joining us on Talking Fußball. This is it for part one of the show. We'll be back with our discussion about the Dortmund-Bayern match after the break. Hey, it's part two of Talking Fußball, the Bundesliga show, your source for all things German football. And well, Terry, we can no longer not talk about Dortmund against Bayern. It was a 4-0 win for the Bavarians. They really waltzed over Dortmund. Everybody but Felix Magath thought that Bayern were hugely superior in this match. They led 2-0 after 9 minutes. They were clinical, they had a lot of chances. Edin Terzic said after the match, nothing really fitted at both ends, it was dreadful. I mean, we don't really need to talk about, you know, what's going on the pitch, because it was such a one-sided affair once again, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and it frequently is. It's such a bizarre fixture, this one, because in recent years, of course, you have been talking about the top two clubs in the Bundesliga, right? You know, generically, let's say for the last decade, if not a little bit more, that Dortmund and Bayern have been the top two clubs. But there's such a gap between the two, really. I think it's not always really accurate to classify them as the top two clubs, to be fair. And yeah, I mean, this was just another example of, you know, Bayern just like riding all over Dortmund again, which is not pleasant to see. And, you know, I think it creates a false narrative, frankly. You know, I mean, Dortmund, you know, can and should be somewhat, I think, embarrassed by their record against Bayern Munich because, you know, they are a decent club with decent players and should be able to challenge Bayern and have a better record than that. But I would still suggest to you that at the very least 7 times out of 10, Bayern would win any game against any Bundesliga team, irrespective of who they are. So that includes Borussia Dortmund. So, but anyway, I mean, the upshot of it was thoroughly depressing. It was entirely predictable. I wrote a preview in which I suggested actually it might be a score draw because I got carried away with the fact that I felt Dortmund were improving somewhat. And I got carried away by, of course, you know, Bayern's defeat in the cup at Saarbrücken. But I should have been less controversial and more authentic in my review and just, you know, Bayern are going to bounce right back after that. And Dortmund are going to be right in there because they always do. And I don't know why I thought this time they wouldn't.
Right. Some people never learn.
No. No. Despite repeated lessons, I never ever learn. But I suppose that's the pain of football, is that it's the hope that kills you. And if you haven't got hope, then eventually you probably lose interest in the game. So there it is.
But talking about losing interest in the game, this might be somewhat of a controversial take, but I'm actually fucking bored with Der Klassiker. I'm so over it. It's 9 wins and 1 draw for Bayern in the last 10. Borussia Dortmund haven't won against them since their 3-2 win against them in 2018, and I think that was not really a meaningful fixture, if memory serves. I mean, nothing really wrote on that fixture. And, you know, whenever these two meet and there's, you know, something meaningful going on, if this is meaningful for the constellation of the table, Bayern always crushes Dortmund. They always do. They always are superior. They have Dortmund's number.
Yes.
And, you know, the other thing is that name.
Oh.
That bloody name. That, like, you know, some marketing fool, you know, at the DFL offices saying that, well, you know, Spain has got El Clasico, they've got all those derbies in the Premier League. You know, they've got the Derby dell'Italia in Italy. We need something similar for the Bundesliga. Because, you know, Greuther Fürth against Nuremberg isn't as sexy to market. And, you know, I get that. Because that's Germany's oldest derby, but it's not really something, you know, you can market in Argentina.
No, I mean the national derby in Germany is the Revier derby. If there is a national derby in Germany.
Yeah, I mean that there are derbies all around. But, I mean,
but you know what I mean, the preeminent derby where most people stop to watch is going to be the Revier derby, right? I mean,
true.
In recent years, I would suggest. I mean, that's not really how Germany is. I mean, like the narrative of like say Spain, Portugal and that like stopping to watch say Real Madrid versus Barca or Benfica versus Sporting, is it? You know, and Boca River, you know, those classicos. I think there's more credence to the thought that these are the fixtures that the footballing nation, you know, will stop and pay attention to. And if Germany has that, it's probably the Revier Derby. But I would suggest that that's a hugely contentious statement as well.
I mean, it sort of has changed a little bit. I mean, if you'd say like 10, 20 years ago when Werder and HSV were both, you know, riding high in the league, you would have said that there was the Nord Derby.
Yeah. Or Gladbach v Bayern back in the 1970s.
Indeed. I mean, yeah.
Or, I mean, even conceivably Bayern and Stuttgart, which is a remotely local-ish derby, you know.
Or Bayern against Nuremberg and, you know.
Bayern against 1860. I mean, Germany and the Bundesliga actually has the privilege and the benefit of having such fantastic monumental derby games, and yet it's manufactured its own one, almost on the base of very little actual heritage. These two went at each other in the 90s when Dortmund were good, and they've been at each other a little bit during the Klopp era, where there's been, you know, close to parity, and that rivalry spilled over into the German national team of 2012 European Championships, of course, famously causing divisions within that camp because of the animosity between the two sets of players. But these are exceptions rather than the rule. And I've been arguing this for years, that the Klassiker is an entirely false and harmful narrative to adopt because it's putting too much emphasis on an event that doesn't really exist and increasingly does not live up to billing as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like promising Lord of the Rings and you getting Narnia.
Hey, that's harsh, dude. No, that's harsh. Come on. Take that back.
All right. It's sort of like promising Lord of the Rings and you are getting, I don't know, Bridget Jones' Diary.
No, it's promising Lord of the Rings and getting the Amazon version of Lord of the Rings.
There you go. Don't knock your Kindle. I totally agree with you that the DFL is basically shooting itself in the foot by making it the main focus of their advertising campaigns all around the globe, because by now, people must be like, well, it's a one-team league and Bayern always has Borussia Dortmund's number. Why are we even watching? You know, I mean, you could explore an awful lot of other avenues trying to market the league. Maybe not reaching as many people, but you know, you might actually reach enough people that might pay an interest into what is going on in the league and actually start paying more attention than, you know, the casual onlooker who might get into that Bayern Dortmund shit.
Mm. The problem, Nick, is also that so much of this is based also on the quality of the players as well. From the perspective of marketing a fixture or a league, let's say a league, so much of it is based upon the actual players that are playing. And I think as club fans and as game first kind of fans, we may not necessarily live in a world where that happens, but there's a whole world of football where there are football fans, with online football fans, who are more interested in players than they necessarily are in clubs, and even if they are in results in some instances. And that can't be underestimated. And the appeal of Bayern Dortmund in recent years is that they've tended to have, you know, recognisable stars playing for them. Whereas you try and look at, yeah, back in the even the relatively heyday of Werder versus Hamburg, you'd have struggled. And
don't you go on knocking Ailton.
Yeah. Okay. I apologize for knocking Ailton because I love. But I think my point is that if you were to try and do this now, let's say Hamburg get promoted into the Bundesliga next season and then make a big play for the Nord Derby, you know, you're not looking at the kind of star quality players that are going to necessarily interest international broadcasters. That is wrong, but it's also true. And I think that this is one of the reasons why Der Klassiker as a concept works a little bit better, because at the very least, it's got star names. But, you know, I mean, the opportunity there is to explore the heritage and the authenticity and the culture of these derby games and to look at and the history of, you know, the Rhine derby and the Nord derby. And if Schalke ever come back up to the Bundesliga, then the Revier derby as well and others. But instead they go down what I think is for them is probably an easier course. But I mean, the more Dortmund lose these games, the more of a joke the Bundesliga appears, if that's the game that you're trying to push.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the biggest challenge here for the DFL should be, and you know, the things that, you know, they shouldn't go down the most obvious advertising route and, you know, say, well, Bayern Dortmund, you know, everybody's heard of Mats Hummels, everybody's heard of Thomas Müller. Yes, let's do that. I mean, they should think about what sets the Bundesliga apart from the Premier League, from La Liga, from Serie A. It's fan participation. It is about the culture of the entire league and its fans. That's what you should market. And that's not about a game. That's not about one game. It's about the entire league.
Mm. Yeah. And the opportunity, therefore, is to market on a weekly basis rather than just waiting for two games to appear every season. It's possible that we've got people, listeners, who perhaps are, you know, marketing specialists, and they might be looking at this saying, look, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, but this is not how, like, partners, sponsors, TV companies, advertisers, this is just not how they think. That's not how their brain works. And so it makes it a difficult league to sell. But irrespective of that, it doesn't really make any difference. It's kind of academic. As I said, for as long as Der Klassiker is so one-sided, it is not going to be an event that people are going to take seriously and they're not going to spend that much money on. And that's the end of it. So it doesn't really matter what the alternatives are. If that's where you're going, it's still going to fail.
Yeah, it's about as serious as the silly walks that you can see in Monty Python's. Anyways, one last topic that we probably should get into. I mean, we've mentioned throughout this episode that there have been a number of DFB Pokal matches in midweek. And, well, Mainz went out. They went out to Hertha Berlin. Were a few Bundesliga sides playing each other. Wolfsburg against Leipzig. Yeah, Wolfsburg won that, so the defending cup champions are out of it. Dortmund won against Hoffenheim. But there were a number of surprises from, you know, lower league sides. Köln went out against Kaiserslautern.
Mm.
And, you know, probably the biggest upset was Bayern Bayern went out to third-tier side Saarbrücken, which means now that there are only 16 teams left in the DFB Pokal, there's one side from the Regionalliga Südwest, which is Homburg, who won against Greuther Fürth. There's one side from the Dritte Liga, which is Saarbrücken. And there are 8 sides from the Bundesliga 2, meaning only 6, yes, only 6 Bundesliga sides are left in the cup.
And 2 of them will definitely be out because they're drawn against each other. Yeah.
So with the quarterfinals coming up, we might look at, you know, 4 Bundesliga sides being left. Maybe at most 4 Bundesliga sides being left. Maybe even less. Now, is that a good thing?
I suggested this as a topic of discussion. Again, if you go back to the marketing bods this time in the DFB, they will be looking at this and saying, this is all wonderful and romantic, but what sells TV rights is big names and big teams. And if the big teams aren't in this competition, then we're not going to make that much money out of it. So there's that. But then there's the sort of fan experience and the romance and all the real reasons why you should love football. Because, you know, as football fans, we shouldn't be worried about marketing. We should be worried about whether or not we're enjoying this moment, whether or not we can get that. It's not about entertainment. It's about being involved and being engaged in this competition. And I think it's terrific. I mean, it's classic, proper cup football. And it's interesting in that the DFB comes at a time in the season. Well, I think clubs are really struggling with the fixtures and just struggling to bed into the season. Like, its English counterpart doesn't start until the new year, to the second half of the season, at which point everyone's kind of in their stride. They know what kind of season they're probably going to be having. Then they set up for the cup accordingly. Some field weak teams and get knocked out because they just can't be doing with it. And others think, no, we're going to have a go at this. But because the DFB Pokal is in this part of the season, it's very, very difficult to know. And it's awkward and embarrassing when you get knocked out. And Bayern, of course, are the high-profile example of that because they left out some key players, including Harry Kane, and figured that they would make it work. And by rights, probably should have done as well. And now they're out yet again in the cup. And up until yesterday, Thomas Tuchel had to have a huge amount of grief for this. And it has not gone down well. I mean, like Leroy Sané and Thomas Müller going over to the ultras at the end of that game and, you know, apologising to them for dragging them all the way down to Saarbrücken to watch their team lose and promise a response, you know, the next week. And it's fair to say they got it. But on the one hand, you kind of do want to see the top teams competing for this trophy because it's an important trophy. And if for some reason they're not doing that because, you know, they're too distracted by league or maybe European campaigns, it might diminish the competition somewhat. But from a romance point of view, it's a wonderful thing to see. And I think there's a very good chance that we're not going to see the current champion holders lift the trophy. There's a good chance we won't see Dortmund lift the trophy. Bayern is definitely not lifting the trophy. Someone new-ish is going to win that trophy, and that is something to look forward to. And there's the possibility of a second division club playing in Europe next season.
Well, there you go.
Here's a hot take for you. Hertha get relegated to the Dritte Liga, but win the DFB Pokal. That is a hot take, especially for our good friend Matt Herman, who's not with us today.
Well, Matt, you're not here to defend yourself, but...
this is what happens when you skip meetings, man.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's sort of like when you come back to the office after, you know, day
what?
Off. And you
what? Yes, this is that email.
You know, you see that pile of papers on your desk and it's sort of like, what? What? I didn't want to do that risk management analysis. Give it to Svensson.
Love it.
Anyways, when it comes to the cup, I think some of the matchups that we have in the next round are great.
Yeah.
I'm especially looking forward to the Homburg St. Pauli match, which, I mean, Homburg, what a story. We probably should talk a little bit more about that. But hey, that is what the Aufstieg edition is for.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the lowdown on the next edition of the Aufstieg.
Right, this is it for another edition of Talking Fußball. Hope you enjoyed it. The show has been produced, as always, by our all-star producer, Aiden Rantoul. Terry, here's your chance to plug all your stuff.
Like all of my stuff, I have been doing podcasts all over the show at the moment. Do check out the Sound of Football podcast, recorded every Monday, published every Tuesday, every week throughout the course of the season. on General Football Chit Chat, mostly English football basis, it should be said. And yeah, the aforementioned podcast with John Hartley, once of this parish. John Hartley's sick of football and he wants to talk about films instead. So we've come up with a podcast called The Real List, which is based on a list of 101 movies to watch before you die. We just recorded a podcast on Into the Wild, and we're about to record a podcast on The Thin Red Line. It's a bit of a departure, but you might be into that kind of stuff, listeners. And so if you are, I urge you to listen to it. Thank you very much for the plug, dear boy. Oh, and buy my book, Borussia Dortmund, A History in Black and Yellow, and give me money. Yay!
Right, that's all the time we had for plugs. I can quickly plug the fact that I do write the questions for the German football quiz on the FC Quiz app. This podcast can be followed on X at Talking Foosball. Give us a rating on iTunes, write us a review, we love those. And me, Nick Wiltang, I'll be back with the Aufstieg gang next week. So until then, it is goodbye for now.